Good afternoon, everybody. Hello. My name is Paul Yuknovich. Thank you very much for coming today. I am one of the lead program managers for Visual Studio, and what that means is I work on the product group. And my team is responsible for the cloud tooling that you see in Visual Studio today that's actually a part of the Windows Azure SDK. Also in the past, I've worked a bit on SharePoint, other IDE features, and data access. So I'm really happy to be here with you today to talk about the tooling enhancements we have across the board for Visual Studio. And when I think about the design vision, the design principles that we think about in the team, it's really about two things. It's we want to constantly improve the tools that you all use to build cloud applications, and also we want to inject the cloud tooling at every kind of aspect or every step of the application development lifecycle that you guys have. Right? So it's really about two things. It's about that tools, productivity, and the power, and also the lifecycle. So there are several things that I want to do today. And actually, before I get into the agenda, I'd like to get to know you. Maybe you can get to know each other a little bit. Who here has done some Azure development already? OK, quite a few, maybe 50%. Who's actually deployed a cloud service already? OK, very good. That's a lot of us. Who's using the June 2012 1.7 SDK that we just released? OK, less hands. How about the November 2011 1.6 SDK? OK, how about the 1.4 SDK or higher? That was April of, I don't even know. OK, very good. Well, I think we're seeing actually a pretty good mix of maybe some folks that are newer to Azure and a lot of us that are actually pretty experienced. So what I'm going to do is, for the folks who haven't seen Azure as much, I'll do the quickest overview and kind of hello world style piece. But then also, I'm really going to go deep after that. So I'm going to hit that 300 level advanced content, give you some tips and tricks, and we'll walk that fine line, and you can speed me up or slow me down as we go. Does that sound okay with you? All right. Thanks. So a few things on the agenda. Really, I want to focus, after a little bit of overview, I want to focus on the cloud service project. That project is really the core asset in Visual Studio that we have that can model your cloud service and that can package and deploy your cloud service. We're going to spend some good time there. We'll talk about deployment, you know, getting your app into Azure and all the best practices and things that we can do there and the lessons learned that we've had on the team after working with you guys. Then I want to get more into some things that, you know, kind of go beyond that in the life cycle. You know, when things go wrong, we need some help and we need the ability to diagnose what's going on in the cloud. So I want to share some best practices and some tools that you can use to diagnose in the cloud. And as a lot of you know, it can be actually more challenging to deal with issues that happen in the cloud, especially in production. You know, what are we going to do about that? Then we'll talk about the application development lifecycle. You know, some of the things that happen with test, continuous delivery, automation. I do want to get into things like performance, like how do we look at some performance issues and fine-tune that. And then all the way throughout, we'll do tips and tricks and demos from my point of view, and hopefully that'll be some good stuff. Sound good? All right. So this is the overview part that I said I'd do just a little bit of. So as you've seen probably in the keynotes or maybe in Scott Guthrie's or Mark Rusinovich's talks, we've actually in the past few weeks, we've unveiled several compute options, right? So starting all the way from the left, now we have these lighter weight websites. So you can just quickly and easily get that IIS application up into Azure and, you know, rely on Microsoft to manage it for you. And, you know, most medium trust apps will just work, which is really cool. We also have virtual machines, not to be confused with VM roles, but virtual machines, which is really about that durable and persistent virtual machine where rather than bringing your app, you actually bring your entire operating system, your entire VM, and Microsoft's hardware and infrastructure will actually run it for you. So you might also hear the term IaaS or infrastructure as a service. And that's what we really mean there. And then the final compute option is cloud services. And really, this is the most scalable, highly available option that we have. It's, you know, Microsoft's kind of premier PaaS offering or platform as a service. And really, with cloud services, you can focus on the app and allow Microsoft to focus on scaling it for you and keeping it totally available. Another thing I'll say about cloud services that differentiate it from let's say websites is you actually can still customize the virtual machines and actually what's running at the OS level. So you can install your own agents, let's say your own cache service, your own diagnostics agents. You can actually deeply customize what's on that operating system. And you can actually customize each tier of the application because you can have each tier role running on a different VM. What I'm going to focus on today is really on the cloud services all the way on the right, and I'm going to hit a little bit on the virtual machines. And the reason why is, well, not only was that in the abstract, but the cloud services is kind of the most mature option that we have. It's actually in production today. It's not preview, and I want to make sure you can make the most today of what's in production. It's a little bit washed out on the screen right now, but I'll speak to it. So looking at the anatomy of a cloud service, we have a few different things. The purple boxes really represent a virtual machine. So at the end of the day, when you spin up your app, it's running on a virtual machine. It's just a virtual machine that you didn't have to create because Microsoft provisioned it for you. And then your application, that kind of blue ovaly circle, is the thing that gets deployed on top of it. And where it's washed out on the screen, forgive me for that, this is saying web role. And we actually have these different kinds of roles, which is a flavor you could think of, or a template for a virtual machine. And the web role will stamp out VMs that already have IIS on it. So it's actually totally perfect for your IIS or your web front end to run. Then, you know, contrast that with a worker role, hard to see again. The worker role doesn't have IIS pre-configured. Worker role is really intended for any custom workload, any custom process that you might have, whether that's your own server agent running in a typed loop, a task scheduler, whatever you want, right? So that's, you know, typically, you know, we might see front ends running on the web role, and then we might have a lot of heavy, you know, back end processing dispatched to worker roles. And the two can work together with other services like queues so that they can stay in communication. The last thing I won't spend too much time on, but that's a VM role. That's a little bit different than everything else, but it's kind of like a web role, except you, once again, can upload your own VM to the cloud instead of using Microsoft's stock VM. And the reason why you'd probably do that is if you have a really intense or really long setup process that you need to do, right? So a little bit of trivia, the hosted TFS service, Team Foundation service, actually runs with VM roles because there's so much setup, including all of Visual Studio and all of Team Foundation service, that we need to run up in Azure. And running that as a little startup task in a web role would just be way, way too much, right? So that's what VM roles there for. And you have a lot of different compute options, okay? One other thing, so you've got the role in kind of like, you know, classes and objects or instances of the class. With a role, you can have instances that we stamp out of as many identical VMs as you want, right? So I'm showing here, you can have in one, two, or an infinite amount of these VMs, or we'll call them instances from now on. And that's really how you get that high availability and scalability, right? Because if you have at least two instances, if any one instance goes down, gets rebooted, gets healed, gets serviced on Patch Tuesday, your other instance is sitting there behind a load balancer taking traffic, sustaining your customers, while the first one is being healed and serviced by Azure. So that's a really cool thing. It also, if you have a lot of load, it gives you the ability, just through config, to give more instances when you need more computing power, or you can scale back when you don't need all that power. So, you know, that kind of goes with the spirit of utility computing, where it's really pay as you go. So far, so good? Okay, and then, as I kind of alluded to, there's a load balancer, which is an Azure service that sits in front of all of these instances. It has a, you'll hear the word VIP, where basically there's an IP address that's public to the world. That address is taking traffic, and then it can do the load balancing kind of round robin style behavior, where it routes traffic to each instance. And it accepts HTTP, secure HTTPS, or TCP. Okay, so we talked about our storage options, our compute options. Now I want to talk just briefly about the storage options. There's actually many more than this, but you know, these are the main ones I'm going to hit today. We have things like blob storage. That's really just about, it's like file storage, right? You can put files up there in the cloud, and then you have a really nice HTTP REST address to just go refer to that blob, download it. Customers can go hit and download from there. Also, you can secure the blob storage, so if you don't want it to be public, only internal either signed calls to that blob or just APIs can hit that blob. So you can make it basically public or private. We have things like table storage, which is just abundant single table kind of storage. And it's kind of NoSQL-like, where it can be schemaless. You can have different schema at the row level, and you can have tons and tons of data with rapid querying over all of that data. So table storage, really cheap, really abundant, really optimized, you know, for one table. And then we have SQL Azure Database. So kind of contrasting from the single table option, when you really want relational, when you really want to work with, you know, SQL that you're used to, we have our own SQL server up in the cloud that's highly available, and you can take advantage of that. And it's very, you know, very, very similar to the actual on-premise SQL server. All right, so now that we've talked about a few of our options, just a quick overview. The Visual Studio tools actually ship as a part of the Windows Azure SDK. The latest version that only a few of you probably checked out so far, just came out, is the June 2012 release. The number of that is 1.7. And this includes the free add-in and the free tools for Visual Studio. And I'm really excited to say that we support now both Visual Studio 2010, SP1, and the new 2012 RC. So now you can do development on 2012, and you can obviously continue to do it on 2010, whichever option works for you. And actually, the really cool thing is, as a team, you can have developers using both 2010 and 2012. They can work with the same projects, round trip it, and there won't be any lossy behavior. So we've actually kind of maintained really good compatibility between the project formats, knowing that, you know, you want to be able to check things out on new tools without messing up the rest of your team. Okay? And then rather than, you know, show you, kind of speak to a lot of these bullets, I'll show you the tools and we'll get a good feel for it. But it's going to give you that productivity. It's going to give you all those ALM tools. A few other just quick notes. We do support only .NET Framework 3.5 and 4.0 as a target. And that has to do with Azure, or Windows Azure itself, only supports 3.5 and 4.0 up in the cloud. As the operating systems installed on the VM support .NET 4.5, you can expect that our tooling will also start to support 4.5. But just for now, keep that in mind. Pick one of these two, and you'll be off and running. One other note is that as you move up the continuum of Visual Studio SKUs, going from, let's say, professional or express to professional, premium and ultimate, you're going to get more features, obviously. And when you get to, let's say, ultimate, you have features like IntelliTrace. And we've made sure that those features also work well with the cloud as you go up the SKUs. So as you would expect, IntelliTrace for the cloud works with Visual Studio Ultimate. And the easiest way to go get the tools is just windowsazure.com, and then we have a developer center under develop.net. I won't read this to you, but we've actually done so much over the last, I'd say, about a year and a half that we've worked on this. We've shipped every 2 to 3 months on average. And we've done a number of things from, you know, platform enhancements, whether that's supporting RDP and the networking features, to the tooling enhancements, like really streamlining and fixing up publishing, to the ALM enhancements, like enabling IntelliTrace. So this is, you'll have the slides to take home, and you can kind of see what we did in each version. So that said, if it's okay with you, I'm going to close PowerPoint for a bit, and we'll go look at the actual product. All right. So I'm here. This is actually Windows 8 release preview. The tooling now actually does work on Windows 8 as well. Works on, you know, Windows 7, all the versions that you expect today, plus Windows 8. I had a picture of my daughter somehow poking through there. I want to show you a few quick things. First, you know, I mentioned the Windows Azure site. And just home base to check out, if you go to develop.net You can see all the different languages that we support. Today I'm really going to focus on .NET, but just know that these other languages are available if that's what you happen to use in your company. And once you get to .NET, you can see that this is where you can install the latest tools for Visual Studio 2012 or 2010 SP1. Also, all of our best how-to guides that we have are right here. They speed dial you into the docs and kind of get you going. And they're really problem and task oriented, so I think they're pretty good. I've actually written a couple of them. Another thing that's really good to have in your tool belt is the new management portal. The easy way to get into the new management portal is manage.windowsazure.com. We'll just log in with our Azure account. They actually enabled ACS for us, which is pretty cool, so I can use my Active Directory to log in. And then I'm seeing a whole bunch of resources. Actually, it looks like my partner in crime, Thomas Quinn, just provisioned a whole bunch. Oh my gosh. Well, let's actually check out the cloud services. Let's try to hide Tom, because he's really taking a lot of my room here. And I can see basically all of the different cloud services, those containers for computing. I can see each deployment that I have. So I have two actual deployments running, and they're in the production slot. And I also have a staging slot, which is handy, because I can deploy into staging, VIP swap it with production. And the management tools make it super easy to deal with that. I see my virtual machines, SQL databases, storage, all kinds of good stuff. So this is really a good home base to do the post-deployment management and operations. And now let's get into my favorite thing. Let's get into Visual Studio. So I'm going to show you everything on 2012 RC, but everything I will show you will also work on 2010, so not to worry there. Notice that I'm running as admin elevated. You're going to want to do that with all your Visual Studio cloud development, because our debugger today loads a development emulator that's doing some things at a system level that require administration. It's actually our goal to remove that admin requirement, and we're super, super close. Really excited actually to say that we now use IIS Express by default, so we can use either IIS Express on the local machine or the full IIS server. But because we're using IIS Express, we can run as your user account instead of a privileged network service account, and then we can start to remove all the pieces that require admin mode. So that's coming soon. So let's look at a few ways that we can get into this. And I just said I would do sort of a hello world. So if I create a new project, I see that there's a cloud entry point. And just so that you know, any cloud, web, or WCF template is a good way to get into cloud development, because you can either start with a native cloud project, or you can start with a web project and you can add the cloud later. And that's actually really easy to do. In this case, let's start with cloud. And I mentioned all those different roles. Like, we have the web roles that have IIS, and then we have worker roles that are completely custom. So let's add a MVC4 web role. We'll add a worker role. And we see that there's even kind of fancy stuff, right? There's like a WCF role that automatically knows how to work with WCF, or let's say workflow. We have a RIA services one. We even can stand up our own cache service, which I'll talk about in a bit. So lots of good options here. Let's go create this. And for MVC4, it's asking me, hey, do you want that to be an internet application? We really like to ask you a lot of questions in Visual Studio. Maybe we should ask you a few less. Okay, we're going to go, we'll go create this project. Actually, a cool thing you're seeing down here is that there's a number of NuGet packages. I don't know if you're familiar with NuGet. That's our Microsoft's package manager, and it lets you easily get references. And also, it's kind of like references on steroids, because you can check for updates, and they can also run PowerShell and actually configure your project. So they're really cool. You're going to see us make a lot of use of NuGet packages. Right? Now, let's look at kind of the anatomy here. So I've got a standard MVC web project, and it's just what you'd expect. You know, I've got my controllers that do my logic, my views, all that good stuff. It's just an ordinary web role. A couple interesting things, though. We've added some references that you're going to want to use for Azure. So when you're working with configuration, diagnostics, the runtime, and you want the runtime to work with the load balance behavior, and then storage, you're going to get that all by default. And for kind of a geeky thing, you can see that if we look at the installed packages, we have things like universal providers. And we can see that now the Windows Azure Storage and Config Manager libraries are now coming in as NuGet packages. So over time, you're going to see my team and the Azure team deliver most of our libraries as NuGet packages. And actually, believe it or not, they're up in GitHub, so you can actually go see the open source right now. We're getting more open with that, and we're also going to be able to provide you kind of real-time updates to these libraries, you know, if demand kind of warrants it. Or you could actually check out the current state of the source code, go do a git pull, and go actually see exactly what the team is up to. So it's actually pretty cool. But we build actually fully supported acknowledged ones, and we're going to pull them in through NuGet. And so I'd say we just have a little bit more work to do to make sure that diagnostics and the runtime itself can also come in as NuGets. All right, so we talked a little bit about that. Another thing to note is we get this Windows Azure project, right? And the Windows Azure project, as I mentioned, is kind of the core asset that lets us Azureify, model your Azure application, and start to do some really interesting coordination, right? We can coordinate between the different roles you have, so like my web and my worker backends. We can coordinate the load balance behavior. So if I open up, let's see, my web role, I see that we have actually a kind of a nice design surface, and that works over the two standard files that we have, the CSDEF and the cloud config file. You know, they're XML files, but you don't necessarily need to work in the XML if you don't want to. You can use this nice designer, and you can see we can set the scaling behavior right away. So one instance literally means one virtual machine will be allocated to this tier or to this web role, and I can dial it up to 2. I can dial it up to 2,000. If I want to pay for that much. And we'll go ahead and we'll, on the local machine, we'll create a load balance behavior. We'll actually create a data center on your local machine, and we'll help you simulate that and kind of see how it works. Now, in reality, my recommendation is to stick with about 2 instances on your local machine, because you're going to use up your RAM really fast. But in the real cloud, it's actually totally acceptable to do that, because you're spread across a data center, you're spread across a server farm. All right. So let's kind of take this Hello World application, and we can go ahead and run it. Oh, and I didn't talk too much about the worker role. The worker role is just kind of looks like a Windows service, right? There's a run loop, a start event, and you can do your custom work here, right? Whether that's something in a tight loop, whether that's working with queues, whether that's spinning up your own HTTP server, you can kind of do all of that right here. So let's hit F5. Now, because the Windows Azure project is the startup project, we won't do the normal behavior. Like, the normal behavior is we take a web app and we spin it up on IIS Express. In this case, we know that the Azure project is the startup, so we're going to start you off on the Windows Azure emulator, which is a free tool that also comes with the SDK. And the emulator knows how to deal with the runtime calls. It can simulate Azure storage, and it can also give you that load balance behavior on your local machine. So while that's coming up, we'll look at a few other things. So we can see that we have the compute emulator and a storage emulator. We can look at exactly what's going on, and that's actually going to be useful for tracing. Looks like I didn't pre-warm my machine. All right, here we go. And also, as I mentioned, now we're actually using IIS Express. So I can see I had 2 instances of those web roles, and that literally looks like 2 IIS sites that are being spun up that are identical, and the emulator is serving as the load balancer to send traffic to either instance. So the really cool thing is, you know, just in your own test environment, you can make sure that your load balance behavior in the statelessness of your app is actually working really well. And if I look in the compute emulator, I get a visualization of each of my roles. These are each of the tiers of my app. If I drill into a particular role, I can see trace output coming from that role or coming from that service. And if I make any diagnostic kind of output I'm going to see it here. So it's really helpful to monitor the health and monitor the issues on your local machine. All right, so as far as Hello World goes, that's pretty much it. Do we have any questions before I go on? Now we'll kind of get into some deeper stuff. All right. So what I want to do, let's actually shift gears, and we'll close this solution. We'll open something a little bit more flavorful. So I have a lot of copies of this. Can't have too many copies when you go on the road. All right, so what I have is the MVC4 kind of showcase sample that's up on www.asp.net, and it's kind of cool. It's a good, just kind of simple MVC example where there's controllers that go get some data. The data actually now looks like JSON, and it actually includes a mock file, so you don't need to have a database running on the local machine. And so our controller will actually load data from the mock. But the cool thing is, just by changing one line of code in the controller, I can go pull this data from something more meaningful, whether that's a SQL database or a NoSQL database like MongoDB or some arbitrary web service REST that's going to return JSON. So I really like this sample. We're going to use this to build on for the rest of the hour. And as I mentioned before, I can take any on-premise web application, and if I want to convert that to an Azure web role, all I need to do is right-click on it and say, add Windows Azure Cloud Service Project. So I'll right-click and I'm going to do that. What we'll do here, this is similar to the cloud solution that you saw me build a moment ago. I can get this error list out of the way. Here we go. It's just saying there's more work to do. But we've now just created that Azure project, and we've wired up this MVC on-premise application as a role. And not only that, in the 1.7 version, we've even just added a few of the references that we think you'll be missing to work with Azure right away. So you get all four of these by default. Otherwise, we actually don't really mess with your application. We don't want to make bad assumptions. So we just make sure that we would do the basic things you would do to get it hooked up as a role. After that, realistically, you probably still have some work to do, because if you have stateful code that's writing to the file system, that's not really a good assumption up in Azure, because Azure is completely stateless. And as Azure manages the VMs and the operating system for you, it could at any time, spin down a VM and give you a fresh new one. So that writing to disk isn't really a reliable plan. So you want to use those storage options that we talked about before, whether that's blob storage, SQL Azure, or you could even use an SMB share or a virtual disk. You have all those options, but you just need to make sure that after this step, you've done a little bit of work to verify that you're using the right storage option and not just writing to disk or to the registry or something like that that's not durable. Okay, but we've wired up the Azure project, and actually, honest to goodness, this is the one from online, and it does run out of the box, which is pretty cool. We've done a bunch of work to make sure that, typical projects don't have obstacles. In just a second, it'll spin up. Okay, and we have a really pretty, simple photo application. We're seeing kind of some cool JavaScript sort of behavior. We can zoom into pictures. And as I mentioned, it's a little bit wimpy, because this, this could almost be a static website. We're not really doing much interesting logic. And we're also loading data from this file, which I also think is kind of wimpy. So let's actually do some more interesting stuff here. Why don't we actually let's build out a real data tier, and let's get some data coming in from a data tier. The other thing I want to do is set us up to be able to do some back-end processing of those images. And some really cool ideas I have in mind is I want to be able to compress those images, compress them down to each device that might consume it, whether that's an iOS phone, whether that's a Windows phone, whether that's some other kind of device. Also, I could start to do really nifty stuff. Like, I could have a back-end job that's bringing those pictures together into some kind of a collage, and I could use APIs for that. I could even do facial recognition. And that's the kind of thing that with a real Azure cloud service I'm going to do that's way above and beyond a normal website that'll help me kind of really scale up in Azure. So let's go ahead. We'll add a worker role, and this is where I can do that nifty logic. Probably should have named it better. That's fine. All right. And let's go build out the data tier that we said we'd do. So to do that, let's go into our photo controller. And you can see right now the photo controller is just returning that that mock file as an action result. So what I want to do is actually hit the database, and I want to return the JSON coming back from that database instead. So let's we'll grab a few snippets so you don't need to watch me type. First thing I'm going to do is, actually, you want to see something really unorthodox? Why don't we run this in MongoDB? So just to kind of keep me honest, right on this local server. Oop, it's MongoD. I'm spinning up just a really simple, lightweight NoSQL database. And then to work with this database, what I need to do is add a reference. Actually, let's add a NuGet package. That's even cooler. So we'll search online. We'll search for Mongo. All right, we can see that TenGen has a officially supported driver. And the nice thing is this works really well with C# and VB. You get all the link providers and stuff like that. And now that I've pulled in that reference, we can import the namespaces that we need here. So basically the driver, the support for link, and for EDM style models. And then let's also pull in the Windows Azure namespace, because I know I'm going to work with Azure in just a sec. All right. So we've got some imports. Next thing I'm going to do is bring in the actual actions that my controller will call. Let's get some of this out of the way so everyone can see it. Oops. Going a little hotkey crazy. This is really simple code. What it's going to do is create a Mongo server connection from a connection string. I'll show you the connection string in a second. It's really simple. We're going to get a particular name database. The default for Mongo is test, so I'll just use test. And then basically I could do my queries. So the way that you get a query is you ask for the photos collection and you deserialize it into your model, right? So my model, literally in my app right now, is the photo class, just a simple struct, you know, with things like the photo URL, the name, all that good stuff. It's exactly what we saw in the JSON. Right, we're going to deserialize the list of photos from Mongo right into these photos. I'm going to do a little bit of link query where I exclude some of the IDs that I don't want, convert that to a list, and then serialize it back as a string because my app is expecting a string. And then if I'm going to initialize this for the first time, I just have a little bit more code that does exactly what I did before, where I take that data coming from a local file and I push it up into MongoDB, and that way I've primed it with some working data. Make sense? So you can see that the connection string is squiggled, and that's my cue to actually write a little bit more code. So let's that's annoying. Oh, thank you. Good call. That's weird. Am I? I think I'm in a class. Oh, you're right. Thank you. That's why. Rookie mistake here for me. private string connection equals. I actually kind of do know what I'm doing. So we're going to pull from the Windows Azure namespace. Now there's a new object called the Cloud Configuration Manager. And in this one-liner, we can now call getSetting. And we can pass in the key name. Right? And the really cool thing is with this new API, this is new in the 1.7 libraries, this API is really smart. The first thing it'll try to do is it'll look into your Azure application. It'll look into your application and say, hey, am I an Azure application? Is the role environment present for Azure? If it is, it's going to look in your cloud config files, right? Whichever cloud config that you have. Nice thing about cloud config is post-deployment, you can change that just with a config setting, even using the management portal, no redeployments required. However, if you've been writing, you know, if you've been kind of coming from the on-prem world, you're probably used to working with web config and app config. That's our current app setting store. So this will do a cascade. If the role environment isn't either there or this key isn't there, it's going to revert back and look in the web config or app config and kind of look there. So the really nice thing is if you start writing your config lookup code like this, it's going to work on-prem or in the cloud or even in a WinForms app. It'll work really well. And then the last piece is I need to define that setting in my Azure application. So what I can do is just open up a role. Let's get this out of the way. We're going to add a setting. And we're going to put in a connection string. And unlike normal connection strings for Mongo, it looks kind of like a URL with a MongoDB prefix. And then you just put in the DNS name. So right now for my local machine, it's localhost. So now let's give this a shot. Oh, we're still not calling it. But that's okay. So we have some new controller actions. And so what I should be able to do is I should be able to make a REST call directly in to that new controller action that I made, query data. And I can see that the equivalent JSON is now coming back. Right? So I know that this API call will be functionally equivalent to loading the file. And so I could just do the last task of coming back into my photo controller. We'll comment this one out. Instead, we'll pass it in as content. Right. So now when I request the gallery action, it's going to hit this function instead and actually hit MongoDB. We can actually pull up the trace window so we can see the traffic coming in. There it comes. Cool. So that's the real deal. Now we've built out a data tier that's working with our Azure front end. Now the interesting thing is we've done this all locally, but I need to, you know, probably think about how is this going to work when it gets to Azure, because Azure actually doesn't have MongoDB natively running on Windows Server. So the cool thing is we can use that other compute option that I mentioned before. We can use Windows Azure Virtual Machines, and I can have a completely custom workload, a completely custom server running up in that virtual machine. So if I look at, if I pop in a Server Explorer, you're actually going to see in Server Explorer we have a number of tools just for Windows Azure. So I can think about the compute containers that I have, like all the cloud services, storage, but now I have a new one for virtual machines. And because I did a one-time step of importing my subscription into Visual Studio, Visual Studio can see into your subscription and it can start to enumerate everything you can do in your subscription, including the IaaS virtual machines that you have access to. So that's just fetching them right now. Okay. I can see I have a number of IaaS virtual machines at my disposal, too. And actually, back somewhere on the west coast of the US, I have this database virtual machine, and that's actually where I have MongoDB running. If I get the properties, I can see the DNS endpoint for this virtual machine. That's what I'm going to use for my connection string. And Visual Studio gives me a few other options that are pretty cool. Like, I can see all the endpoints that are exposed to me, whether they're public or internal. So I can see right from inspection that MongoDB's port 27017 is exposed as TCP. Also, I have RDP. I have remote desktop exposed. And that gives me a really kind of quick hint. But let's go lift this DNS address. So we'll take this. We're going to pop back into our photo gallery role. And we're going to change the connection string. And on my local machine, what I want to do is just test out and make sure that my local simulated front end can go hit the back end that's actually running somewhere in the United States. All right, and we actually got data coming back from a virtual machine in another tier running MongoDB, running something completely non-Microsoft somewhere else. So you can start to see that by mixing and matching the compute options, you have power to do something completely new in Azure, but also take your existing servers, your existing workloads, and get those running too in conjunction. Right, so it's actually super powerful. And if you like to keep me honest, what I'll even do, like, what if you want to see actually what's going on in that virtual machine? Well, you can right-click in Server Explorer, and now on any virtual machine or any cloud service, you can connect using remote desktop just so long as it was enabled. And obviously, if it was Windows. So let's hit connect. I'll use my RDP admin password. Make the security people happy, hit some dialogues. And now we're remote desktoping right into a VM that's sitting on Azure in the US. And I can see that connection that we literally just made coming in from here. Pretty cool? Yay. Thank you. All right. And one other just tip and trick. Let's look at this multi-config. The multi-config is really there to help you target different environments, whether that's the local machine, the cloud, or even other custom environments that you might have, like test, pre-production, LKG, you name it. So by default, Visual Studio will always set you up with two environments, one for local and one for cloud. And you can see, like, if I pick a specific configuration, the designer will kind of change and show me what the specific settings are for that configuration. It's inheriting these settings from all configs, but I can now override and say, hey, locally, I only want to test against localhost with my local data. In the cloud, I want to use a different database, and I don't want to mess with that. So now I can see when I toggle between cloud and local, I'm getting the multi-config behavior. And if I look in Solution Explorer, all that did is just literally on disk, it persisted for me the right connection strings. And here's my local one, use development storage. Or sorry, that's the wrong one. Here it is. We're talking about Mongo. So I've got my remote Mongo, and then I've got my local Mongo. So that's really all it's doing. And what I can do is actually make arbitrary configs. So let's copy this one. And now I can come into test. And if my QA team wants to have a completely different database server, we can wire that up right here. So it's really powerful. You get these multiple environments. And we've really kind of tried to optimize the tooling over the last year to make sure that you can build one package that will work across as many environments as you guys have in your actual real life cycle. So we've had some fun. We've built out kind of a multi-tier cloud service. Now let's look at getting that thing actually into Azure. So I have a few options for that. If I'm using Visual Studio, I have the package command. I can pick the config file, kick off a package. That'll build all the projects in my solution, and it will also create the deployment package used for Windows Azure. That's called the CSPAC. It stands for Cloud Service Package. It's kind of like the MSI for Azure. And we'll do some extra funky stuff where we'll pull in the right config file that you targeted. And now you know that if you hand this to a tester or to whoever we'll upload into production, you know this is the actual exact build that you want, just what you want. But I actually don't even need to do that. I can right-click, and Visual Studio can publish or push directly into Windows Azure for you. This is something a year ago, I'm not going to lie to you, was incredibly hard, but something that we've made a lot easier now. And in the past, you might have got yourself a little bit familiar with certificates and provisioning certificates and uploading them and getting everything all straight so that Visual Studio can communicate with Azure in a secure way. But actually, those times are kind of past. Now all you have to do is just click to download a file. This file is called the Publish Settings file. And it's just a little piece of XML. I think I have a sample right here. Really beautiful. But we have, you know, we know that we're using Azure Service Management. That's the service management APIs the Visual Studio will use. We know which endpoint. Right now, this is the public Azure endpoint. And I was talking about certificates. My management certificate is Base64 encoded into this file. So it's actually truly my certificate, just in a nice portable form. And then, try not to memorize that. And then I have one or more subscriptions that can use that certificate. In my case, I co-admin multiple accounts that are both used for my team, so it's appropriate for me to have multiple subscriptions. So I just have the subscription ID and the stuff, but I don't really even need to know how that works. All I need to do is just download this file or, you know, get it from a team member, and now I can see into all my subscriptions. And also, the cool thing is Visual Studio is now also aware of all of the subscriptions that you co-admin. One just kind of best practice, that file really is a secure secret. It has your keys into Azure. So I'd say either delete it after you import it or put it in a very secure place, ACLed with only the people who should actually have access to it. So now that we've done that, the cool thing is, just like I was seeing in the portal in manage.windowsazure.com, Visual Studio can see into my subscription and enumerate all the cloud services. I could even provision a new cloud service right on the fly. So I could say photo demo tech ed. Let's see if that's taken in DNS. I know some of you might be squatting on it. We could pick West Europe as the data center. Actually, while I'm here, one thing to notice is we've actually eliminated the Anywhere data centers. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. Anywhere used to, we thought it was a cool idea where, well, you know, based on availability, we'll give you anywhere in Europe that we can. It turns out that that led to issues where inadvertently different tiers of your apps would be running in different data centers. You'd be seeing latency, maybe even networking ingress and egress charges. So, you know, based on your feedback, we've actually eliminated those options, and now we give you more explicit options. And just the best practice is co-locate your bits and your storage in the same place, unless you're intentionally trying to have data flow from different data centers. This is going to be a lot better for you, hopefully more reliable. So we're going to provision this West Europe. It's actually super fast. We're already done. And then I have a bunch of settings. I can pick which slot I'm going to deploy into. You know, just to get it up and running, I'll put it in production. But in reality, I'd probably be using either the staging slot of this instance, or I might have just a complete test cloud service account, like Photos test, so that I'm not really deploying into production. And that's probably something that would be frowned upon. I can pick the release config. So if I want, I'd pick debug if I want the debug PDBs. Also, just know that this will trigger the same web config transforms that you guys are used to. So if you've set that up, you can choose those here, and that'll work in coordination with the cloud tools. Right? And then, you know, I have each of these kind of config files. I can pick the right one for the job. Another thing, kind of a best practice, I like to enable remote desktop because for a really quick troubleshooting session, it might save the day. So I'm going to go enable that. And that used to be incredibly hard, but now it's really easy. I'll just type in a username, a password. And this will basically install this user account into my role instances so I can use these credentials to get back in at a later time. And then if I want to be super advanced, I can even control which certificate we're using for each environment. We generate one automatically for each one, but you could have a very particular cert that you want your team to use. You might even have one that's wired up to a smart card, so you can, if you want to hit those advanced scenarios, you totally can. We even changed the expiration date so that it's a little while later. I think it used to only be a week, and people weren't, yeah, I see some nods. People weren't too excited about that. So we're listening. We'll hit OK. And just kind of a geeky note, by enabling remote desktop and these other components, that's physically going to add a module, or it's going to add a plugin that will sit beside your app and be installed on Windows. So I'm actually installing kind of more software by default into my cloud service. And that's, I think, one of the unique benefits of cloud services. You can customize what's installed on it, and you can even run your own setup tasks, and you wouldn't be able to do that in a number of other PaaS offerings. So that's pretty neat. Getting into the advanced stuff, you can actually choose the storage account that's used for deployment. I'm going to be consistent, choose the one in Europe. It's kind of an implementation detail, but just so you know, when we publish your application, we first upload it into Windows Azure Storage, and then the Windows Azure guest agent, when it's provisioning and stamping out VMs, it's pulling from Blob Storage, which is local to it, and then it's stamping out, and then once we're done kind of provisioning the images, it throws away that blob. So it's just kind of a necessary evil to provision your applications. So you need to pick it here. Now, don't worry about it. If you don't want to think about it, Visual Studio will just create one for you. But you can also control it. And then, because later I want to show you IntelliTrace, I'm going to enable IntelliTrace. That's easy. I'm basically just checking some boxes. One thing I'll call out here is we have this concept of a profile. So I can save all the deployment options actually into a profile here. And it's going to create an MS build file that I can use later. And I can have an arbitrary number of these target profiles, one for each environment. So if I want to save a different set, let's say for debugging purposes, I can debug using a different, you know, slot. I can have some different debugger options. And then when I come and publish again, I can swap between these profiles and just quickly dial in all the same settings. And it won't be as error prone. All right? So we'll go ahead and we'll kick off a publish. And then we'll just sit here and wait for another 4 to 8 minutes for that to happen. Just kidding. It does, you know, deployment does take a little bit of time. And what it's really doing, not only uploading the package, but it's standing up and provisioning actual new VMs and new instances of Windows Server on your behalf. So that's actually where the time is really taken. We do speed up the subsequent deployments because we use an in-place update. And the in-place update will be a bit smarter about just pushing the deltas into Windows Azure. And it won't actually tear down your deployment, tear down your VIP, and do some of those things that actually cost you time and compute hours. So we do that in-place update by default. And we have this Windows Azure activity log. I'll just call this out. This pretty much has all the supportability info that you might need. You know, your subscription ID, what's going on, like what phase are you at. You can see I uploaded my RDP certs. We verified a few accounts. And as it starts provisioning, I'm going to see the role status. I'm going to see, like, hey, this VM has been created. This VM is being started. And it's going to walk through my upgrade domain, and it's going to show me the status of each thing. So the nice thing is if you hit a deployment issue, or you want to have a log of how things went, you could just always use this Windows Azure activity log. I'm not going to talk about it in this talk, but if you look in the conference guide, I did another session on continuous delivery. So everything I'm showing here around deployment, you can completely automate using MS Build, PowerShell, and TFS. And you get the exact same experience you're getting in proc with Visual Studio, but just through your own automation. So just know that that's an option. All right, so we did a bunch of stuff. Just to recap, we kind of built our first cloud service. We added some roles. We did some multi-config. We hooked up MongoDB. We used some virtual machines. Now we want to get into the next phase of the life cycle. Oh, and we talked about, let me just review a couple quick tips. There are some differences between the Azure emulator and Windows Azure. Like I mentioned, by default, we use IIS Express, and that runs as a user account. So just keep in mind, if there are going to be some differences between who has user access, you might experience some kind of fidelity things there. Also, I think the emulator is ideal for more of the unit test, the dev test, but and also for multi-instance behavior. But it's not really a substitute for doing a full integration test in Azure. So what we often find, and maybe tell me if this resonates, you know, typically you do as much kind of testing and development as you can locally, but then you still do one more push to the cloud, let's say to a test cloud service, just to make sure that everything is really working in the cloud and making sure that any of those symmetry differences, like user access, what's installed on the guest, just making sure that those things still hang together well and that there's no assumptions that we sort of missed. We use the Cloud Config Manager in conjunction with multi-configs. That helped us move between environments. And here's a sample of code that you can take home on that. In terms of publishing, publish settings will make your life a lot easier, but please put them in a safe place. It really is your credentials. So put them in a safe place or actually delete them. We can Azureify or basically wire up a role with any existing WAP project, any web application project, whether that's ASP.NET, MVC, WCF, workflow. So that's super handy. And then we saw a few other things like the activity log that helps us with supportability. And we enable the number of agents like diagnostics, IntelliTrace, or profiling. So now let's shift gears. Let's talk a bit about diagnostics. Like, what happens when things go wrong? Here are a few of the main options that I think you should know about. You maybe already do. First one is remote desktop. You know, if you want to interact with the actual VMs, the actual instances, you can RDP in. You saw an example of me doing that. You just need to enable it in the project first. Then there's Windows Azure Diagnostics, and there's kind of two levels that'll help you on. There's the system level, where you can get at all the system logs, whether that's the IIS trace logs, the HTTP failed request logs, that kind of stuff, you know, perf counters. Then there's the application traces, and you can write your own trace output, and I'll show you that in just a second. But you can write your own Azure Diagnostics trace with the verbosity level that you want, and that'll just leave you some breadcrumbs if something's going wrong or if you hit a certain state. And you can monitor, you can even, you know, pipe that into Azure Storage, and you can monitor that at any time you want. So it's a bit more work, but it'll help you in the long run make your app a lot more traceable. And then the last thing is kind of the ultimate feature, the Visual Studio ultimate feature, with IntelliTrace. And if the IntelliTrace agent is running, you can take a snapshot in time of what happened during an issue. You can download that to your local machine, and without affecting your instances in Azure at all, you can, kind of like a VCR, you could debug through what happened and have a ton of trace info. And it's really good if, you know, if you haven't thought through all the issues that can happen yet. Using IntelliTrace is almost like live debugging in the cloud. You can learn about exactly what was going on in the environment at that time, and you can bring it back. And then, you know, I would like to use IntelliTrace in conjunction with diagnostics. So IntelliTrace might help me find the first class of issues, and then I'm going to instrument and watch out for that class of issues later using Windows Azure Diagnostics just by putting in the right trace statements. So getting started with Windows Azure Diagnostics, we won't be accused of this being too little code. It's actually a little bit more code that you have to write for this one. You know, the key thing that I'll summarize for you is you need to start the Windows Azure agent actually in code. So we have this onStart method in your role entry point. You need to write that line of code. And then you need to add some web config so that your web application uses Windows Azure Diagnostics as a trace listener, as a trace output source. And I'm going to leave you with this code in the slides so that you can paste it in later. We talked about, you know, writing your own traces. Right, so that would look like, you know, trace.light, write line, trace warning, trace information, and you can hit those different trace levels if you actually hit an issue. And then by default, we'll actually write that data. The agent will be writing that data into Windows Azure Storage. And Windows Azure Storage, being RESTful, it can be read by a number of different tools, including even just a web page, Visual Studio can also, with its Server Explorer tools, peek into Azure storage, and you can pull the logs at any time from storage. And then you have some control over things like log level, the amount of polling that happens. And, you know, just one thing to be aware of, since you are using Azure storage, this will have a very small impact on cost, but it will have an impact on cost. And it'll also use transactions. So every poll that you do will use a storage transaction. So you might want to just control how often it's polling and transferring data. But we've been optimizing the costs for that for quite a bit. So we actually give you, even in the free offer, we give you, I think it's like 1 million transactions for free. So you won't instantly use them up. And then it's actually like pennies on the dollar or the euro to have additional transactions beyond that. So then the last thing is, that's about kind of creating the diagnostics. You can actually look into the diagnostics logs in storage, just like any other kind of OData source. You can do OData filtering. And we have a lightweight kind of tooling experience for this. There's a number of great third-party tools that can view the logs, or use your favorite OData reader, and you can view the logs. And I'm giving you an example here in green. Like, if you want to find what was going on at a particular date and time, you just do a standard OData filter and filter that data out. And if you don't remember all of this, you can just go hit that link, and we have a pretty good how-to guide on that. So that was a little bit of upfront info. Now I want to show you diagnostics in the wild. So let's think about a scenario here. The issue is, like I am right now, I'm on the road, but unfortunately I'm getting a report that we're having a problem. The report I'm getting from the team on the road is that customers are hitting particular endpoints or particular calls on my cloud service, and that's actually throwing errors. Actually, it might even be worse than that right now in the demo. Let's see. Okay, we're here. So what I heard in the report is, if you hit a very particular controller, let's say the one that inserts data, the customers are instantly getting errors. Right? Now, what am I going to do? This guy's deployed in the cloud, and I'm really in trouble because I'm here in Europe, and I don't have my good machine with me. I don't have very good connectivity. Uh-oh. How am I going to debug this thing and help out my team? Well, the really cool thing is we have some pretty slick options for you. First thing is, using the virtual machines, I actually can stand up a virtual machine from an ISO right away that has my complete dev environment already installed and has connection to my source repo, and I can connect remotely into it. So probably that would take about four, I mean, I've already started it for the sake of the demo, but that would probably take about 4 minutes to provision and spin up my dev tools. I can access this anywhere on the internet. And now I've got Visual Studio truly running somewhere in Amsterdam with my actual dev tools and with my enlistment to this code. Pretty sweet. So the next thing is, with my project loaded from source control, I can look into Server Explorer under this compute node, and I can zoom into this deployment that my team is reporting the problem on. And I can look at any one instance. And if I've enabled IntelliTrace, like I just did in the last demo, I could just pull the IntelliTrace logs. And that's going to tell the agent to take a snapshot in time, push it to blob storage, and then I'm going to download it to Visual Studio, and I'm going to analyze that report. And if that takes a while, I can pull a Julia Childs. So the report will look exactly like this. And I don't know if you're familiar with IntelliTrace, but you get a whole bunch of information about the context and the state of what was going on in the snapshot that you were looking at. We'll let this asynchronously happen. And so if I scroll down to exception data, that's a good kind of initial place to look for problems. Oh, here's my new one. We could actually look at a new one. Let's do it. So scrolling down here, okay, I'm seeing some interesting stuff like path not found. What's going on there? Oh, this is interesting. Is my little zoom in tool going to work? Okay, my zoom in tool isn't working. But what it's saying is it couldn't find the path. It looks like an IIS site root. So IIS site root app data photos. And remember, that's that mock file that I was using to insert data in. It can't find it on the guest image. Well, that's kind of interesting. What I could then do is I could use remote desktop. It's weird. This is like remote desktop within remote desktop. But I could look at this instance, and I could connect using remote desktop here. I'll try not to get lost going down the rabbit hole. And now I'm remote desktoping into my actual cloud service VM. I'm really worried about getting lost now. Okay. And if we look here, what did it say? F drive, I think? F drive, sites root. We'll look at this site. So the photos are there. That's kind of interesting. But there's not that content file that has that JSON mock, right? So I can actually quickly see, oh, okay, I've got actually a hunch about what this problem may be. And if I look back here, it should have had that app data folder, right? That's kind of what housed the JSON file. So looking at my actual solution, I can see something that's actually a really common problem. You can see that this is not a bin copyable content file because it's build action equals none. And actually, when I grabbed this sample from ASP.NET, this is the first issue in Live Azure that I hit myself. So I'm just translating it straight to you. So what I would do to actually fix this is I would set the build action equal to content. And that just means when MS build runs, it'll take the file and it'll throw it into the build outputs just like everything else. And when we provision the application up in Azure, that file will definitely exist. So actually, it turns out to be a really simple fix. And another tool that I have at my disposal is WebDeploy. So let's see if I remember to set it up here. Yeah, I don't think I set that up. But what I can do is, you'll have to believe me on this one, if I'd set up WebDeploy, I could actually just push the simple change through WebDeploy, which is about as fast as FTP, it's just about 4 seconds, up into that Azure guest instance, and I would see right away that things are working. Now, that's not a full-time fix, because the next time Azure cycles or heals my role, that fix is gone. So what I would actually do is check this change into source control. I would either do a CI or I would do another publish, and I'm going to push that actual change back up. But you can see using IntelliTrace and remote desktop and diagnostics, I can get that error info pretty easily, and then I could push it back up. And that's something that kind of would have been impossible otherwise to diagnose, I think, without, you know, remote desktoping in and just groveling through a ton of logs and setting up my own tracer. Make sense? Pretty good? Cool. So let's swap back. So the next scenario I want to think about is what happens when we have, you know, performance issues. And what we could do, just like in normal on-premise applications, we can use the Visual Studio Profiler to actually give us a more intense kind of view of the different timings and hot paths that we have running in the Azure Guest Agent. Of course, if we like today, we can continue using practices like perf counters, and Windows Azure Diagnostics will pull those perf counter data for us. But you know, if you have the profiler, the profiler is especially sweet. So I just want to give you a quick demo of that too. So we'll pop back here. We'll come back out of the rabbit hole, so we won't use our DevTools VM anymore. And I've made another deployment just before this demo to the Photos Perf Cloud Service container. And I can see in Server Explorer that profiling was actually enabled, so I've detected that. And then, oh, I'm in a busy state. That's not a good sign. What I can do is right-click on any instance where I've enabled profiling. I can view a profile report, and just like we did with IntelliTrace, our agent is sitting there running. It can work with this in conjunction with a CLR, grab that performance hot path information, throw it in blob storage, and pull it down. It's kind of like a lot of steps and machinery that it's doing. And then we'll get hot path and instrumentation views here. Now, I have actually two profile reports. I have one for the worker role, and I have one for the web role. And the issue that I think I was seeing was actually hitting the database. And I could actually validate that assumption by looking at the call tree. And all you would normally do is you just start at the top of the call tree, you hit this little hot path black fire button. Maybe we should make that a colored fire button. That would probably look better. Every step of the way, we should add color back. And I can actually see really quickly, I've got this query data call. And some junior developer, maybe it was me, put some sleep code in there. That's probably not good. And I can view the source. And actually, the profiler will take me right into the source of my enlistment. And I can see that the code hacker was up to it again and put a sleep in my code and pulled it out. Well, in reality, we'd probably find an algorithm that wasn't ideal here, and we'd be able to fine-tune that algorithm. Or we could profile the interaction between our tiers, because typically that's where communication will have the most latency. But it really just gives us that quick lens to hot path into where, you know, where in the pie am I spending the most time, and I can optimize my code there. So another really cool thing, and what I love about the profiler is you're instrumenting actual real live-side data, you know, because there's nothing like performance data with real usage and real traffic. It's pretty hard, in my opinion, to simulate this locally until you just get that real environmental data. Right? Make sense there? So as I alluded to before, we have a new feature called continuous delivery. You might have seen it in a few different keynotes and things like that. But the basic idea is once you get into that more mature practice, you can automate really every step of the way from the build to the testing to the actual delivery into Azure. And we have a few different options for you. If you're feeling comfortable with using our Team Foundation service, which is in the cloud, it's in preview. It's a really, really easy experience where you go through a wizard. We can connect your TFS project with Azure. And just every check-in can result in an automatic or a manual push into Azure. Also, we have a bit of a white paper that shows you how you can do the same thing using your on-premise TFS or even not using TFS at all. You could just wire in MS Build or wire in PowerShell to your own automation or even to another product like Team City, and you can do your delivery that way. So do I have about 120 seconds. We can see, I can give you just a flavor for what this looks like. So if I go into Team Explorer, which project am I looking at? I have a TFS instance in the cloud. I can pull down my team projects. And the portal we have the ability to basically set up TFS publishing. That just brings us through a very simple OAuth wizard that gives us OAuth user access from the TFS account back into Azure, and that connects the two services just for the purpose of publishing and sending data across. And then back in Visual Studio, the experience I get, if I look at the right one, in the builds menu, and if you're familiar with TFS, we automatically give you this build definition. It's kind of like a batch script on steroids. And we set up the trigger so that every check-in results in a continuous integration. But you could do time builds, rolling builds, all that stuff. And then there's an actual XAML workflow that will walk you through the process of building, making sure your tests pass and your quality gates pass. And then it'll actually do the heavy lifting, and it'll push that working application into Azure. And you have complete customization. I can choose the slot all the different parameters and plugins, and I can completely automate that whole delivery process that you saw me do before, so that every check-in results in a working deployment. So pretty neat thing you can go try out as well. And just to really close, so what we saw were a number of ways that the tools improve the way that you build cloud services. We spent some quality time doing diagnostics and debugging tricks, and we saw some ways that, you know, whether it's performance, hooking into test, hooking into delivery, we integrate with that application lifecycle. And that's really what you're going to see us keep doing on these, you know, roughly 3-month increments. So with that said, I really want to thank you so much. You know, please get your evals in. The fives are for my boss. The comments actually go directly to me. And I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.